The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
I'm Billy D. Williams, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom. From comics and video games to science and technology, if it's geeky, we've got it covered. And this is an episode of State of the Empire.
It's too long. You went on too long. Okay, you lost
sorry,
it now.
Sorry.
You had me, then you lost
sorry,
it.
Sorry.
Hey, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hi, I'm Matt.
The force is not strong with this one. In fact, the force is very strong with Matt. Matt is our Star Wars
Indeed.
Expert. We're all experts in our own way on Star Wars, but Matt more so than most.
I am, of course, the music expert.
Thank you, music director Hex. State of the Empire is our Star Wars speculation podcast where we dish on all the latest news relating to Star Wars and also speculate on some things that may or may not be true. We use our force senses to try to, you know, predict the future.
Hopefully steer the course in the right direction.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Stay on target.
Yeah.
Try to just like lift this beauteous X-Wing out of the slushy muck that is the Dagobah septic tank.
Cool.
Yeah. Didn't really think about that one, but...
Well, we got news to match.
Ooh.
Here's the big bad news that's on everybody's mind.
Yeah.
Michael Arndt, fantastic writer of Little Miss Sunshine, Toy Story 3, a man who on this very show, we've said many times how thrilled we were that someone so capable of creating a dramatic and yet funny ensemble cast as far as the script writing everything. Dude's not on Star Wars anymore. Kicked off. Or something.
Bum, bum, bum,
A surprising lack of circumstances in which he left.
Yes.
They're not talking about that. They're just talking about who's in.
Yeah, they're just, Kathleen Kennedy was just like, oh, well, you know, he put in a lot of work.
And now
he's not here.
Actually, I thought it was pretty insulting because when they announced it on StarWars.com, they said, Master Filmmaking Team announced for Star Wars Episode 7.
And I was like, didn't we already have one?
And all they were announcing was that J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan were taking over as the lead writers. Kasdan, great name.
Yeah.
Not really known as a master to anyone. J.J. Abrams, as far as I'm concerned, he makes a lot of money. He's still a young upstart.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no master anything about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure Michael Arndt would be the first person to say that, well, I'm not a master. I'm just a screenwriter.
And we'd go, shut up. Well, you're smart. Say,
he's not a master, but he's extremely good. And it doesn't really...
Well, because that's the thing. The team together was the young blood. I like the idea of Michael Arndt, J.J. Abrams. You throw them together. I felt like something good would come out of there.
Right. Very fresh.
Yeah. Whereas Kasdan, I mean, I got nothing against Kasdan. Don't get me wrong. It's just I wanted something new.
Right.
And JJ is not good at giving me something new if you've seen the last two Star Treks. But
we're, I guess, as a group, predominantly skeptical of what JJ Abrams can bring as far as writing, directing. He's probably a good choice.
Yeah. I mean, well, the thing that bugged me the most was the rumor that not only was he obviously the news is that he's not part of the project anymore, but the rumor was that everything that he wrote. Complete rewrite.
Yeah.
Like they're not taking any of his stuff. It's page one.
According to Badass Digest editor Devin Farassi, who cites inside sources, Abrams and Kasdan will completely rework Arndt's script from square one. Quote, this isn't a rewrite. This is a completely different movie with different main characters.
That's what I'm just like, what? What the? So does that say anything about the original cast members being involved? Like, clearly, the rumors are they're going to be involved.
Right.
So does that mean Arndt's script, the main characters weren't the original cast, which I think was a good idea?
I'd be willing to bet that was the case, Arndt wasn't writing with them in mind.
I just so badly want to know what happened, but I feel like we're never going to know because it's...
Yeah,
you know,
and I think the response has been so positive about the idea of bringing back the old cast. That might be one of the reasons why they went this direction.
It's such a shame. And, you know, Kathleen Kennedy, she's actually struggling right now in the wake of this news. I mean, because... Obviously, we're all here. We're worried about it. There's another reason to be worried about it, not just in the quality of content, but in the time they have to complete this project.
Yeah, because if they're starting from scratch, they got to rewrite a whole damn script and a whole new story.
Michael Arndt was working on a 40 to 50 page draft or synopsis or something before a year ago when the purchase announcement was even brought to the
public. Yeah, he was working on it like before we ever even knew about it.
Right.
So now they're going to throw a year and a half of work at least away and start on something new. Well, Kathleen Kennedy, rumor is she wants to push the release date to 2016, and she is not getting support from Disney on that one.
Oh, God, no. It's terrible news.
Robert Iger is holding the fort, 2015 or bust, and actually J.J. Abrams agrees with him.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
The only way I think that might work is if they're like, oh, the rumor said it's a complete rewrite is maybe not true. Maybe it's just little tweaks here and there, and they're going to go into production on schedule.
Either that or this is actually old news and they've already been writing.
Maybe, but I don't know. The way it broke, I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems unlikely. It sounds like the boat's rocking over there and they're... I would rather them delay it and make it good than rush to meet a deadline.
If it's also the writer, as J.J. Abrams in that role, that hat mm-hmm. is saying, no, we can do 2015, then...
Yeah, but I don't... J.J.'s skills as a writer,
That also might be him going, oh, Disney says it's 2015. Yeah, we can do it. We can do it.
Of course Disney wants to abide by the deadline because they got a theme park cranking out and they got video games and all this other shit. Like, they're trying to make it all happen at, you know, on their timeline instead of having the film be good.
Also, Kasdan is technically listed as producer for 7, 8, 9 and said he was writing episode 9, supposedly. They might just be like moving things forward. Kasdan may have already had a bunch of ideas.
Interesting, moving things forward.
Well, Kasdan did have that relationship with George Lucas where he was hearing what the extended universe would eventually one day be. So he knows that better than most. So that's something, I guess, but
he's been deeply involved for a very long time. And there's some words of encouragement from the Huffington Post, actually. There's an article we'll link to on this episode's page where they wrote about how episode 7 is not the first time there's been drastic writing shakeups, tying back to Empire Strikes Back, of all things, where there was an original script by Lee Brackett. And she wrote about all kinds of things that shaped the whole scope of what Lucas's vision may have been in her script. Vader wasn't Luke's father.
Oh, wow.
And you can actually read the whole thing online. We'll link to it on this episode's page. I haven't had a chance to read this early script of Empire Strikes Back yet, but I mean, this is all based on what Lucas gave her. So it's an interesting portal into how incomplete his vision was for what we assumed it was point in time.
Yeah, in fact, you know what? You're bringing back a lot of memories and then talking about even Return of the Jedi. There was a lot of changes at the last minute. I mean, I remember hearing drafts of a story where, based on that draft of Empire, you'd find out that Luke does have a sister, but it's not Leia, and that sister has secretly been trained by another Jedi across the galaxy, and then she shows up to come fight. And then in Return of the Jedi, Luke Skywalker gives in to the dark side, kills Darth Vader, and then when he sees the Rebel Alliance fighting the Death Star, he's like, oh shit, what have I done? Puts on Darth Vader's costume, and then is like, I'm Darth Vader. Cancel the attack. And they're like, yes, Lord Vader.
What wacky shenanigans.
I know. That's so crazy and different. Sounds kind of cool in one way, but another way it's crazy and different.
But it's also dripping of a lot of Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, but maybe that's why they didn't do it, obviously. Yeah. You know, like they clearly went in a different direction. So maybe it's for the best.
Anything could happen at this point, but I mean, just based on his previous work, Michael Arndt being off this, man, we're just pouring one out for you, dude, because our hopes were with you.
He was my champion of the Star Wars movies at this point, but well.
Mm-hmm. He was the new hope.
Yeah, he was. He was my new hope.
You know, we all know this is happening the summer of 2015. We may actually know the month now based on there's a window that all major studios are avoiding placing any major release in is in August. So I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who actually know when this movie's slated for, and they know better than to put their films in August.
Yeah, because no one wants to compete with a Star Wars.
Well, no, even the bad ones made a lot of money.
There's another cost to the speed that they need to develop this film with, and that is that there are two production designers on episode 7, Rick Carter and Darren Guilford. Having two at the same time is highly unusual and points to them developing all those aspects of the sets they'll be filming in and all that stuff for a lot of tandem filmmaking over at Pinewood.
Interesting.
Pinewood, where rumor has it, another rumor from Latino Review, they are building a Millennium Falcon.
I'll believe it when I see it. Yep. As far as Latino Review, I don't know.
I too will believe it when I see it. But if they are building Millennium Falcon, the question begs to wonder, is it for one of the Star Wars spinoff films or is it for episode 7?
Ooh,
that's a very good question.
In relation to those Star Wars spinoff movies, well, we kind of know what the content is now a little bit. An offhand remark from Disney's Jay Rasulo suggests the spinoffs will indeed be origin stories.
No!
This is from Talkie Hat with Variety. One Star Wars trilogy film or origin story film would also appear on the release schedule each year, starting with the seventh installment in the Star Wars saga. That's a very weird, wordy quote, but basically...
Starting with the seventh film, every year after that, there will be an origin film.
Yeah.
Again, we're going to go into this thing again about Han Solo. No one wants to see the Han Solo Avenger. I don't want to see Jabba's origin. I don't care. Episode four was Luke's origin story. Why don't we just continue that story? Like, why don't we just move forward,
My guess is, like, it'll be movies in tandem with characters introduced in seven. Kind of like Avengers style is my
guess.
Worst
part about the Avengers franchise is the origin films. Like, getting to the Avengers was the only reason they made those origin films, so people would know. But if you're doing Star Wars, they're making whole new characters.
The Avengers handicapped those origin films. Like, I feel like they were worse because of the Avengers.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like the Star Wars spinoff is going to suffer the same thing.
It's like, how come all of the Star Wars characters, granted it's a different time, but the original trilogy, we didn't get origin stories for those characters because the movie was their origin story.
Right.
So we're making new characters. Well, we've got to make origin films. No, just make those movies the origin story.
Like, part of the beauty of not knowing everything about Han Solo is that he can at any moment go, oh yeah, and there's this old friend of mine, Lando Calrissian. It's like brand new experience.
Right.
Being introduced to this character. You have no idea who he is, no preconceptions. So, like, he seems like a nice guy. Nope.
Well, not to mention origin stories for superhero films work one way, because if you're introducing a superhero that people haven't heard about before and they have 30, 40, 50 years of history, you got to explain, why does he shoot webs? Why does he climb the wall? How can he afford the armor to build that? Wait, why did he decide to become a superhero? You know, you have to explain that to people because there's so much history.
Right.
But if you're starting from scratch, why do you need to do that?
Just have a good time.
Yeah, right. Just make it a good movie. But it's like, well, no, we're going to do origin stories about characters we already know. If we already know them, we don't need an origin story. Oh, man.
Yep.
Nerd rage. I'd be willing to see a Boba Fett film.
Well, yeah.
Let me finish the thought, because I'd be willing to see a Boba Fett film more so than any Han Solo origin, Wicket origin, whatever origin they're talking about doing.
Wicket? Is that on the table?
There's a Jabba one. There's a Yoda one. I don't care about any of that.
Wicket's origins are well taken care of. There were two television films and an entire animated series, Doug.
Either way, whatever the origins that they think they're going to do, if they end up doing a Boba Fett one, that's the one out of all of them I'd be like, okay, yeah, I'd see that, but I'm not even super excited about. What I'm super excited about is episode 7, 8, and 9, because I feel like that, out of all the characters, has potential for a spinoff movie for new, fresh stuff that we haven't seen.
You know who doesn't want to be involved with the Boba Fett film? Joss Whedon. There was a really fantastic, lengthy interview with him on Entertainment Weekly. They asked, so if Disney said, here's the Boba Fett movie, you'd say no? To which he replied, I can't say for sure because that's a tasty morsel, but right now my heart doesn't go that way. And he said this while elaborating on his desire for projects to be new. In a statement that I think is really meaningful to the current film climate, he said, it's very important that we start creating new content again. We can only build on nostalgia so much before we have nothing left to build on. Mm. Before we're rebooting Spider-Man again, it's dangerous to the culture and it's boring to me. I squeezed in between my Avengers movies a 400-year-old play. I really need to create something new.
I love this man.
Yeah, no, it's a great... Because again, Boba Fett, an origin movie about Boba Fett, that's 100% fan service.
Yeah.
That's all that is. If they're doing origin stories about new characters, then, well...
Joss Whedon put it best of, like, you can only build on nostalgia so much. I want new stuff. I want new stories.
I agree.
I would be interested in a Boba Fett movie if done by Joe Johnston, since he originally designed the character. It'd be interesting to see his take. I mean, because he wouldn't necessarily be a kid in his origin movie, because we've already seen him as a kid. He would have to be, this would have to be a transition into being a badass. Not, you know, Anakin Skywalker as a little tot, but like a real origin into Boba, as we know him.
It's a rare exception to everything we've been saying, because Joe Johnson has been behind the Boba Fett spinoff film camp since the beginning, and since he sort of co-created the character, he's allowed to say that.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the casting of episode 7. There's been a little things here and there. For example, actor David Oyelowo from The Butler went in to try out for an unknown role in Star Wars. And Fruitvale Station's Michael B. Jordan, who's also rumored to be the next Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four reboot, went in to meet J.J. Abrams personally. Those guys are rumored. But also several acting agencies that specialize in talent with certain physical attributes received a very
Wookiee smelling casting call for a tall man, 7 foot to 7.3 feet tall, with a slim build, upright posture, and broad facial features would be a bonus. So possible Wookiee sighting in the casting. You know, the original cast still is not 100% confirmed, except that as it's been since practically we started doing State of the Empire, it's not 100% confirmed, but it's basically confirmed because Mark Hamill's old pal, Freddy Krueger, said that Mark is getting ripped and he's doing physical training right now to get back in the role. That is, of course, Robert Englund, the guy who plays Freddy Krueger.
Not actually Freddy Krueger.
Because it was Freddy Krueger. It's like, oh, he was dreaming about working out. He wasn't really working out.
Freddy Krueger says Mark Hamill's going to get ripped.
You're looking to get ripped. But I was excited to hear that when that little rumor broke out. I'm like, oh man, I want the Jedi diet. What's Hamill working with? I want to know.
Well, according to Robert Englund, sit-ups.
Oh man, looks like the Jedi diet's not for me.
But the real weirdness of the casting involves Harrison Ford and a lot of strange stuff that's been bubbling up. I don't know how true it is.
Yeah, I read an article that was talking about, they said, oh, according to our source, it's just for sure. They just haven't announced it yet. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you like the supposed things that got Ford to actually finally agree to sign on. Supposedly, it said that Ford wanted to see the synopsis for his character's development over more than just episode 7. So, like, he wanted to see something more than just what the next film was going to be. He wanted, like, a treatment for the next trilogy and if there's any spinoffs. Apparently, they gave this to him in August, and he was pleased with it, thought it was fine. He also wanted a commitment to Indy 5.
So, hold on. He was given a treatment that he's okay with in August. Isn't everything being rewritten right now?
This is just a rumor.
Okay. Yes, Hex. You're putting the clues together because it has been speculated that this was part of the shakeup.
So apparently he also wanted a commitment about Indiana Jones 5.
What?
And he wants Indiana Jones now canon in the Star Wars universe.
But that can't happen because there's no script. There's nothing. There's literally nothing planned for Indiana Jones 5 other than Harrison Ford would like to make it. Steven Spielberg has expressed some interest, but there's nothing.
And it's not up to Disney because that's still co-owned with Paramount.
Yeah. Indiana Jones and the retirement home.
So there was that. But also I had a bit about Anthony Daniels.
Ooh.
He was on like a stage talking to, you know, honest fielding questions. And when he was asked about, will C-3PO be in episode 7 or whatever? He said, walls have ears and we know what they look like. They're very big ears. And then he starts pantomiming Mickey Mouse ears over his head. You know, it just and then sort of like smiles and then, you know, lets that go. And it says towards the end of this panel, someone asked about him being the only actor who appeared in all 6 episodes. Like, dude, you're the only actor who's appeared in all of them. Can't you tell us anything about, you know, about maybe being that same actor if they're going to carry that tradition to episode 7? It's all 6, maybe 7. So then Anthony Daniels said, yes, I am the only actor to be in all 7 because I feel. And then he caught himself. And then he says, 6, whatever. And then he did the big ears thing again with Mickey Mouse ears over his head. So that was him, either just a simple slip up, the Freudian slip or whatever. But I thought that was charming, the fact that he played it off pretty, you know, pretty well. So that was nice. But he didn't have any other comment about that outside of that.
What about Kenny Baker? Wasn't Kenny Baker in all?
Kenny Baker is replaced by a robot now.
For the listeners that can't see, I was incredibly crestfallen by that.
Honestly, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'd rather have Anthony Daniels back than Harrison Ford.
Agreed.
Well, that would make sense because he's a damn robot. It's not like, you know.
I mean, it's also his passion is still there.
Yeah.
And looking at Indy 4, like, there's something sad about watching the character age in front of you. Anthony Daniels doesn't have to do that.
Yeah, but I think Harrison Ford is aware of all that. Unless he kind of wants to set the record straight. It's like the impression I get.
Maybe that's why he wants Indy 5.
Maybe I'm just reading too hard into it. Like, maybe that's what I'm projecting what I want into it. But it seems to me that Harrison Ford was like, let's do it right. You know, like, come on, you know, there's only so many indie films left, so let's knock one out of the park. But I also have, besides the cast, different crew that's been chosen. Because when it was announced that Michael Arndt was no longer going to be involved and they're bringing in JJ and they're bringing in Kasdan to work on the script, what I got here is the director of photography is Dan Mindel. He worked on Mission Impossible 3 and both of the new Star Treks. Production designers, which Cap already mentioned, worked on Lincoln and Avatar and Oblivion and Tron Legacy. The costume designer, Michael Kaplan, he worked on Into Darkness, also Mission Impossible 4 and Fight Club.
Ooh.
Ooh, he assembled a bunch of random clothing.
Yeah, ratty clothing. Project Mayhem, those sweaters were really, you know.
The ooh is more of how diverse that is.
Well, and the experience this person has had.
Right, that's what I'm more talking about.
I know.
Special effects. Okay. Special effects supervisor, Chris Corbold from The Dark Knight Rises and Inception. Sound designer, Ben Burtt.
Nice.
So I don't have to explain what he's.
Nope. Nope.
Yeah, you should, though.
Yeah.
Ben Burtt is the guy who invented all the sound effects for Star Wars. He's been in every Star Wars movie. He's a genius. He's awesome.
It was amazing being there at the interview when I went with Mark with a C to Star Wars Celebration. Because Mark is like the biggest audiophile you will ever meet.
Oh, yeah.
And having him geek out for two reasons in an interview with Ben Burtt was phenomenal. Just like him talking about. So when you. In my mind, what I imagined was like Chris Farley from those Saturday Night Live interviews.
When you did that,
when you invented the audio black hole, that was awesome. But it was actually a lot. It was a lot better than that. You should go listen to that interview because it was amazing.
We'll link to it on this episode's page.
Also announced is the re-recording mixer, Gary Rydstrom, who worked on Jurassic Park and Saving Private Ryan. Supervising sound editor, Matthew Wood from The Master and There Will Be Blood.
He's a genius.
Wow.
Like continuously like the most like Oscar nominated like sound person out there today. He actually did Grievous's voice in episode 3. They were going to hire like a real actor, but Lucas fell in love with his voice for Grievous. And
that's
so
awesome.
That's super weird.
Yeah, spared no expense. Visual effects supervisor, Roger Guyatt, who worked on Into Darkness and episode 3. But he also is like, he works at Industrial Light Magic, so that just goes to figure.
Yeah.
So those are the crew that apparently are.
But hey, that's like names associated with the project for the first time ever.
Right. and it's they're all good at what they do. So,
yeah. I mean, we're not walking away going, oh, man, that guy is not good at what he does. Even the people that were with the bad movies, like, well, I mean, their job was to make the movie look good and it looked good.
OK, so Michael Arndt, obviously, we've already said a million times he's not going to be working on the next Star Wars.
Spill out the blue milk for him.
When I was researching, like, well, what's Michael Arndt? Maybe what's he got lined up? You know, like, is there maybe a conflict? Like, what? Like, I was trying to figure out what was the reason why. On October 27th of 2011, so this is going back, it was announced that Michael Arndt had been hired to write a draft for the Phineas and Ferb theatrical film. In October 2012, so a year later, Disney moved the release date to 2014. And then in August of this year, so this past August, the film was removed from Disney's schedule altogether. This led to the speculation that the film probably was canceled. But the co-creator of Phineas and Ferb, Jeff Marsh, confirmed on his Twitter that the movie has just been put on hold and they're still doing it.
So the next Michael Arndt film, possibly, is...
The Phineas and Ferb movie.
God possibly. Damn it. God damn it.
So I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
Star Wars, Phineas and... Oh, boy. Michael Arndt.
I mean, I like Phineas and Ferb, but...
I just feel so bad for Michael Arndt.
Right.
Right, yeah. Going from the Star Wars to the poor man's cat dog.
Ugh, these aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids. Is that the title of this episode?
I just came up with that, yeah, and I want to use that.
Aren't the droids you're looking for. Oh, man.
How about some happier news in Star Wars?
Oh, please. Do we have any happy
news? We can cheer up a little bit. Star Wars Rebels is still on the way, and there's been some new stuff released about it, and it looks pretty good.
Yay, pretty good.
Yay.
a teaser trailer was released that was, like, not even worth mentioning, so let's move on.
It's, like, pretty good. Not worth mentioning, but whatever.
Here's the money shot. At New York Comic Con, Rebels executive producer David Filoni, who is, of course, of Star Wars Clone Wars, introduced the first new character, the series' first major villain, the Inquisitor. He's tasked by Darth Vader to track down the final remaining Jedi Knights.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
That's kind of cool. But why doesn't Vader just do it himself?
Well, what I'm most excited about is the line, the remaining Jedi Knights.
Right.
They actually exist.
The show is set 14 years after Revenge of the Sith.
I'm excited that the whole prospect of
there will be limited Jedi after
right,
this.
Right. They survived that initial culling.
Yeah,
and they're still running years, around. Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
I now turn to our own personal holocron, Mr. Matt Spill,
indeed,
who has a lot to say about this Inquisitor thing.
It's cool in one regard because they're definitely drawing on some expanded universe backdrop. The Inquisitors are from like the old Star Wars RPG. You know, they're dark Jedi that it's almost like they're a political branch of the Empire that essentially is responsible for like keeping religious movements such as, you know, the Jedi and things like that in check. And so, you know, they are essentially expert Jedi hunters. But what's interesting about this is like they're making it one character instead of like the long list of Inquisitors that they've had throughout the years and decades. And they're being revisionist, but at the same time, they're clearly drawing from some old material.
But it also might be that this is like the prototypical character that all
he's
the Inquisitors.
Start, he'll pin a Jedi down and be like, you can join me and be an Inquisitor and I'll be your master and we can go hunt Jedi or I just kill you now. That's a cool scenario to have. Yeah.
But it's also, it's like, if this is drawing from Expanded Universe, it might be that this is where all the other Inquisitors draw from. This was the first person who was handpicked by Vader.
Well, Matt, I believe it goes back farther than that, right?
Well, I mean, 14 years after Revenge of the Sith would be pretty late to be the first Inquisitor. Gotcha. But they don't have to follow the strict version of history, I guess you could call it. I would be okay with it being like the first of many Inquisitors. It's such a cool character idea. They're not Sith. And in Dark Jedi is probably not like a proper term either. Probably a lot of them were Dark Jedi because they used to be Jedi. I mean, a lot of them were during Order 66 was literally repent by the sword. You know, like you can either join the dark side or you die.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of them have some cool, interesting past. I don't know. Did you guys ever play the second Dark Forces game, Jedi Knight?
No.
Nope.
No. Okay. The bad guy from there, Jarek, he was one of the Inquisitors. There's just a lot of really, really cool characters from back in the day.
Let's talk continuity. How likely would you say that this new character, the Inquisitor, is actually attached to previously existing continuity and they're just sort of talking about it as though it's completely fresh?
I'm going to go with, based on what they've already done towards the end of Clone Wars, 0%. I'll make it 1% just to hope, but when they're killing characters that have already died in novels that like came out only a few months prior.
That's bad.
It starts to show you that, you know, one hand doesn't talk to the other. So, you know, you have to take the good with the bad.
It's the story of Star Wars.
And the poor guy that actually runs Star Wars, his holocron, is just going, no, but he's already, oh.
He said Bass died, so who cares what he says?
So, Matt, you were saying that happened towards the end of Clone Wars? Was that some of the final stuff that was released, or?
Within the last two seasons.
Okay.
Someone that died in the Coruscant Knights series. It was actually a book that I never got to. It's the third book in the series. But it was within the last two seasons. They just started offing Jedi that had already been offed. And they have so many to draw from. I don't know why they need to...
And they could also make more.
Yes.
Well, the idea that I like about this being in Rebels is that, again, the idea of what's worse than just having a handful of Jedi left and then being killed off. Maybe some of them aren't killed off and they join the dark side.
Yeah.
Like, that's even worse. So that I for the dramatic purposes, I really like that idea.
No, I'm excited. Like, I have more excite for this project. Now.
Here's a little bit of the directive that maybe will excite you even more. Is that Rebels will center on a core group of characters. Filoni says Rebels will stick with one story and one main group of characters. We wanted fans to get to know the new characters and what they're fighting for. So each episode will have its own unique story while still fitting into the much larger picture of what's going on in the Star Wars universe. In this way, it's more like the original trilogy, which followed Han, Luke, and Leia, where the prequel showed us the grand scale and political as well as personal. This will be a character-driven
personal
series.
Focused. Yeah, yeah.
And when Hero Complex asked Filoni if he'd be wrapping up any storylines in Rebels from Clone Wars, he sort of dodged the question a bit, but went on to say, I've finalized the remaining Clone Wars episodes, and I think they'll really please diehard Clone Wars fans, especially the story arc with Master Yoda. That one is critical to the bigger picture. Star Wars Rebels will be its own series with its own characters. That's not to say characters from other Star Wars media couldn't make an appearance in the series, but Rebels will be distinctive for its own new characters and relationships. But I think we'll all have to agree that Anakin's Padawan will have to show up, otherwise it'll be the most unresolved thing of all time.
Right.
I'm still not buying it. I still think she's going to end up being the main character.
Of Rebels?
I really do, yeah.
If she doesn't show up, it'll be the most unresolved situation that no one cares about.
Except for all the fans of Clone Wars, Hex.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they exist. There are
many, many kids that were very much into Clone Wars and Ahsoka.
Dozens of them.
I just want, I mean, again, if Ahsoka's the main character, fine. But she needs to die at some point. Just to fit, I'm saying, to fit, if you lead into A New Hope, you have to kill her off before that happens.
You do.
Let her die a hero. Let her die awesome. Let her die facing Darth Vader, not knowing that that's actually Anakin.
Unless Disney has grand plans about the fact that... what I love about Ahsoka is she's female, which is great to have a female hero. Wouldn't it be great if Disney had this crazy idea of incorporating a main female hero into the new films and it was Ahsoka? That's just my little child dream.
How long does that species live, Matt?
No, I mean, she'd be older. But also... she's also an alien. I don't know how they age.
I mean, Yoda lives 900 years, so I mean...
But he's old.
If she just has, like, twice the lifespan of a human...
Yeah.
She'll be elder, but that's the whole point of a Jedi Master, is, like, they're older.
Yeah.
So, that's actually... Oh, dang it. No.
But that ruins the continuity.
Stop again, caring about Ahsoka.
We talked about this last time. That ruins the continuity with him saying, oh, Luke, when I die, you're going to be the last of the Jedi.
That's true.
So, she has to die.
Kill them all. Star Wars blooper reel. Hey, we talked about this. It came out at San Diego Comic-Con. It was in a very small screening. A bunch of sources were saying, oh, you're never going to see this again. And then last episode of State of the Empire, we reported that, yes, you are going to see it again. Mm-hmm. And you, right here, listening to this right now, can actually see it. We'll link to where you can on this episode's page. It's made it to YouTube. Finally released as part of J.W. Rensler, the Star Wars Archivist's Enhanced Edition of the Making of Star Wars.
Yay!
You get a bunch of cool stuff with that if you want to get in deep with all the background material for creating the first Star Wars film. Rensler does a great job, and we'll link to where you can pick up the enhanced edition of Making of Star Wars, and also like other things, like just like the Jedi one just came out, so we'll link to where you can pick those up. I should mention that if you're planning on buying anything on Amazon, well, if you follow links from Nerdy Show, then Nerdy Show actually takes in a percentage of what you buy on Amazon, whether we link directly to that item or not, so long as you follow our links. So you can buy the stuff that you're going to buy anyway, and we'll get like 6%, which is pretty good.
At no extra cost to you.
Yeah, it just happens.
Yeah.
So whenever you need to buy anything from Amazon,
like this holiday season, there's a link on the front page now. So, which takes you to a link on the forums, which explains the whole thing. But just to clarify, so
yeah,
more good stuff. Comics, Star Wars comics, man, Brian Wood, Star Wars is still kicking so much ass. If you're not reading it, what the hell is wrong with you? Follow the link on this episode's page so you can start reading it.
It's one of the best things in comics right now, really. And that's not talking down on the rest of comics.
And since our last episode, The Star Wars finally came out. So we've got Star Wars and The Star Wars as our must-reads. Well, The Star Wars is optional, but is very intriguing. It is an adaptation of George Lucas's original script for Star Wars, and it is ridiculously different. One of the weird things about it is there's no script-to-page comparison here, so I don't know what any kind of inflections have been added or how it's actually worked out in the final version. There's lots of strange nods to other aspects of the films. Like there's a kid in it that has the same like yippee runaway that Anakin has in episode one that's so fucking obnoxious. Did it happen in the Star Wars as a nod to the episode one film? Or did Lucas actually borrow that from his original script?
Well, I'm also curious, like, if the borrowing from other sci-fi franchises is also direct. Like the Emperor in the first issue looks like he's Merciless Ming from Flash Gordon.
Yeah, yeah.
Lucas borrowed heavily from Flash Gordon for everything. So I figure like the final product of Star Wars was that much farther removed from his inspiration. And this one is significantly less farther removed from his inspiration.
Oh, yeah.
Like I'm just flipping through the second issue here. R2-D2 talks. And not in beeps and boops. Like he has dialogue with 3PO. And I mean, it's
I really it's hope he has a foul mouth.
He didn't have a foul mouth. He had an attitude still, but it was different. Had a lot of sass.
It is very different. It is very, very different. I wonder if maybe we can see an adaptation of the earlier script of Empire Strikes Back where Vader isn't Luke's dad.
I would love to see. I wish they'd go all the way with it. Do the whole trilogy with the original scripts.
None of which link up to each other.
Right,
they're just all broken.
Yeah, just do it as individuals. Just do an individual thing. So it's like, watch A New Hope, the movie, then read this as to what could have been. Then watch those two movies, then read the Jedi one.
I got to say, there were actually some moments in the first issue of the Star Wars that were kind of crazy. Like, there was some stuff that I just didn't see coming, and I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that early in a film before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, some of it I could take or leave, and it's pretty hokey. I don't know. I kind of want to say it, but I'm not gonna. But just check out The Star Wars. It's interesting, at the very least.
I was in a little bit of shock towards the end of the first issue, which is some ideas that I had no idea were coming. It is definitely very jarring.
Matt, how would you rate the series overall?
I'll say I like it in regards to it's very cool to see how if the movie came out like that, Star Wars would not be what it is today.
Yeah.
It's just, in Lucas's mind, it was so close to going in that sort of direction. It just shows a lot about the creative process and just that, you know, it can be taken in so many different ways.
Right. Like what I was going to say is like reading this is a very interesting analysis of the creative process, seeing how transformative it is from thought to first draft to second draft to whatever this draft is to what actually makes it onto the screen.
What Marvel Earth planet are we supposed to be on?
616.
616. This is like looking at a comic book that fell through a portal from 619. It's like, wait, this is from an alternate dimension where Star Wars is like this. What? So it's like, I like it on that level.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and it's way more Dune-like, if that gives anybody a perspective.
Yes.
See, and like, that's what I love seeing much more obvious the references to the other sci-fi franchises in these. Not because I like seeing George Lucas steal, but I just like seeing, what influenced him, how it influenced him.
Again, with like the seeing how the creativity works.
Right,
yeah.
And then seeing how it transformed once again to what it finally was.
Yeah.
It's like reading Lord of the Rings and thinking, oh man, this was almost Willow. That wasn't a segue, but Willow Watch is on the way. And also in comics news, we have something for you that's probably going to be the most unlikely recommendation you're ever going to hear from me or State of the Empire. There's an Ewok comic that you need to buy.
I don't believe you.
Wait, need?
Well, I bought it. I buy Star Wars and the Star Wars and haven't really spent any time with any other Star Wars comics in the last 10 years.
And they were actually pretty good. I really
this
liked
is,
them.
This is a Star Wars Ewoks original graphic novel called Shadows of Endor, written and drawn by a guy named Jack Giolongo. And it is great. In it, you see Ewoks as kind of semi-realistic, like, you know, badass little forest animals that they are, tribesmen. This takes place just before Return of the Jedi and succeeds in uniting the continuities of the animated series, the two television films, and the mainstream Star Wars universe.
That's a tall order.
That's some Geoff Johns work right there.
It is the Geoff Johns of Star Wars comic books.
Wow.
And you can watch those Ewok movies on YouTube. Like, I mean, I don't know how they, by the time this podcast goes up, if they're shut down or not, but I watched them again and they don't get better. they do not age well.
I enjoyed them as a kid. And I never saw the animated series, but I was aware of it. But it takes all that stuff and it says, okay, say we got to make this work. Let's make it work. And let's not only make it work, but let's make a compelling story in that world where it does work. So you see like fierce monster killing Ewoks, blood, spears, lasers. It's got it all. It takes the goofy stuff and it streamlines everything into a unified world that could actually work with Return of the Jedi. It even explains why they have magic in the animated series and they don't by the time Return of the Jedi happens.
Wow.
Wow.
That's kind of gutsy.
Yeah. And Matt, you got a chance to read this comic?
Not yet. I'm looking at it now. I'm getting very excited by it.
You got to read it, dude. But we'll link to where you can pick it up on this episode's page. Star Wars Ewoks Shadows of Endor. I highly recommend it. It's really cool.
And on that note, we have a song.
Yes, yes, we do have a song. We have Cracker Jack Junction sings the Ewok Celebration Song.
When we're feeling down and out, and everything is wrong, we just pick up our chins, swallow some gin, and sing that stupid song.
Do do do
yub nub
do do
eat yub yub nub
do do do
Tommy Toby Chicken Gnoop Dog Fling Owa
We do
Yawa
do do
eat yub yawa
do do do
Tommy Toby Chicken Gnoop Dog Fling Owa Go teach her to Yub-Nub. Go teach her to Yawa. Go teach her to Glowa. Alleluia-Nub. Alleluia-Nub. Glowa. Teach her Glowa. Glowa pichini foam. A tuti agunda. Go teach her to Goo.
Yub-Nub.
Go teach her to Doo.
Yawa.
Go teach a tutu.
Yacha!
Alleluia-Nub. Alleluia-Nub. Alleluia-Nub.
Okay, before we return to the Star Wars news, we got to give some shout outs to some awesome people. Nerdy Show is listener supported. Only you can make this show and all the other shows in the Nerdy Show Network and all the crazy stuff we do, like hosting the video stream for Nerdapalooza. You make all that stuff possible, and we have a minimum amount that we need to make every single month, and last month you guys did it. It's $300, and in October we got $431.
What?
And when you guys contribute to us, if you leave us little messages, we give you shout-outs and share those messages with everybody else, so we got some right here.
It's my favorite part of every show. Hearing the messages. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Really?
I'm excited. I like it. Well, because whenever we hear for positive feedback, I'm like, someone is listening. It just encourages me to keep going. So that's why I'm here. I just want to hear more of it.
Aww.
This one is actually from someone who helped us with all the stuff that was going on at Nerdapalooza. An awesome girl and a terrific friend. Channy says, Been meaning to throw in forever. Proto Men outtakes are a fine excuse. Less than three.
Nice.
Tyler Hooker says, I love you guys. Here's hoping you make your operating costs in time. I'll give more later if I can.
Aw, that's an old friend of mine from college. We started listening and he can't stop.
Ross Butler says, it puts the money in the bank or else it watches Statham's crank.
Love it.
He means the film, right?
Yeah, it's, I said watches, not washes, but either works. Both experiences are extreme. Barry I says, reoccurring payment for oral pleasure. That's A-U-R-A-L. But you know what he really means. Brent Burchard says, I love the Derpy Show. Keep herping the derps. Matt Mighty Cox, all the way from Australia, says, good day again, mates. Stereotypical enough. While chasing a dire wombat down its burrow, I stumbled across a giant opal. So naturally, my first thought was beer money, not Foster's. My second thought was Nerdy Show. As for another microsode, let's go with Planescape Torment, which he did, in fact, claim.
Ooh. Hmm. I don't even know what that is.
It's a game. Tony's played it. So we have at least one person who's played it. Hopefully more.
It's not some crazy Australian game, is it?
No.
Planescape Torment. That's when we shoot the wings off your plane as you land in Australia.
Jesus.
See who survives.
All the best, Matt Mighty Cox. And also Robert Stoneback and M contributed between now and our last episode where we talked. But hey, thanks to Grant Arundel, Jens Johansson, Frozen Treasure, Lawrence Hondrick, Craig Cosper, Sean Hutchinson, Tolan, Mauron, Benjamin Britt, Cassie Muldrow, and Gary Ure, along with the other people who we've read off the messages from, that makes up our contributors from October. And thank you so much, guys. You're going to get all your perks in the mail. And if you haven't yet received your perks in the email, check your spam folder, because maybe they went there. That would be bad. Be sure to file us not as spam. And if you didn't get it, just email info@nerdyshow.com, because we want you to get those hot perks. And the new perk for this month is Outtakes from Sick Puppy. You have just about 15 minutes of extra content from our most recent Nerdy Show Book Club episode, including a version of the 911 recording that we recreated from the book Sick Puppy. Without Mozart playing over the top. And you can hear Colin's sound design for this, which was really, like, with the Mozart, it's funny because it's so, it's like so tragic and ridiculous and everything. But when you just hear it without the music over the top, it's terrifying. So please enjoy.
See, another reason why I always like the shout outs is that whenever we read someone who's like, hey, Ghostbusters Resurrection, because no one ever types it on the message boards. It's the only time I hear it, and then it disappears into the ether. Aww. So I have to savor it when it comes through.
So if you like Ghostbusters Resurrection...
I'm just being melodramatic. But please, tell us we're good.
And hang out in the Nerdy Show forums, because you can hang out with other people there who like the same stuff you do. Or get in fights with people who don't.
Yay.
But mostly everybody hangs out and has a good time. Shifting over to video games, there's not much to report, but another blurb about Star Wars 1313. The smoldering corpse of what could have been the greatest Star Wars video game of all time is still being picked over with some very interesting new grisly details.
So you brought us up, now you bring us back down again.
I don't know. At least we can enjoy what's left. like a buzzard. concept artist.
These aren't the droids we were looking for.
Concept artist Gustavo Mendonca posted some of his concept work from 1313. Much of the art pertains to the version of the game that focused on Boba Fett, because it was more or less, there were two versions of it. One of it was like smuggler base, and the other one was, hey, what if it was the Boba Fett game?
Okay, if the Boba Fett origin story is 1313, I'm voting for that.
Okay.
Whatever. I'm still indifferent. I'm sorry. I'm still indifferent.
Lucasfilm said that Star Wars 1313 and LucasArts' other canceled projects like Star Wars First Assault could be licensed out to third-party developers, so...
I just remember some news that, I mean, I don't know, it's video game related, how Telltale Games was like, oh, we would love to make a Star Wars game. It means absolutely nothing, but it makes me really happy.
That's yeah. This is not even remotely news, nor is it a rumor. It's simply that on Reddit, Telltale's Kevin Bruner said that he would love for Telltale to make a Star Wars game.
And everyone who likes gaming ever went, we would like that too.
Yeah.
And I'd like to add...
And that's very smart, because if the whole thing is that EA is licensing it, they're licensing it out to third parties, they should make noise and then have the fans say, yes, we want that too.
Though there are certain kinds of games that Disney can still make and or hand off to somebody else, most mainstream gaming isn't that. And so EA has the stranglehold on all that. But if EA wants to pass it off to Telltale, they can.
Yes.
It's a weird situation, but unless EA chooses to do that, then Telltale can't do jack. But I would love it. And also, I recently played the first chapter of The Wolf Among Us, the Fables game, and it was awesome. So,
is it out?
Yeah.
Oh, Duan. Yeah.
And I, and totally unrelated news, I pre-ordered my copy of Walking Dead Season 2. So I'm already ahead of all of you.
Whatever, Fables is cool, though.
Not as cool as Walking Dead.
And I haven't even, I've read like the first book of Fables. Like, I'm not a Fables expert by any means. But I think actually maybe The Wolf Among Us is a stronger game for it being the primary introduction to the series for me. So.
Interesting. Hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. That a secondary source of information, just like The Walking Dead game, can make someone walk away going, wow, it's...
I want to read more of that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the other thing about 1313 is that the tech of 1313, the thing that we saw demoed at E3, Matt and I, where they showed us how all the branches of Lucasfilm were working together to make the craziest gaming experience of all time, where they were doing motion capture in a virtual environment, just like they made the Avatar film, but with the special Lucas version of that real-time rendering tech was being used in the game. Well, now that tech is being used for film. There was a demo that we'll link to the video of it for the tech that was developed originally for 1313. It's basically going to be the future of filmmaking. Scenes are rendered out in real-time 3D environments, reducing the need for post-production. So,
any possibility this has anything to do with Star Wars Rebels?
I'd say, given how stylized Rebels art looks, kind of unlikely, but it's possible. I mean, because, for example, the Jim Henson Studio, they do a children's program called Sid the Science Kid, which is actually, it's a CGI show that is completely puppeted. If you guys have ever seen the behind-the-scenes stuff for the making of the Ninja Turtles film, where they have the radio-operated mouths and heads and stuff, it's this fascinating combination of where they have a virtual set that actors are stomping around in using mocap bodysuits, and they're made actually so that their feet are in the shape of the characters, so they have the same kind of walk and gait that the character animations would have. And then, at the same time, the puppeteers are operating the mouth and eye movements and doing the live voice work. So there's already a precedent set for this in multimedia. And what this demo showed was basically an actor walking around a virtual 3D environment where it's not just the characters that you're seeing rendered live, but also the 3D space where like they'll bump into a box and the box will fall over in 3D space. So it's like they're acting inside a virtual set. And that's really what's new about this. Mm-hmm. Also, it looks so fucking good that when I saw the video at first, I thought, what's this film I'm looking at?
Yeah, yeah. The thing that blew me away too was also like the real-time weather changes. Mm-hmm. Like just on the fly, you can be like, you know what? Let's put a new building here. Bam. And then just like what repercussions does that have for filmmaking or video games?
It is virtual filmmaking. And it is crazy. So if you haven't seen this demo, check it out. It's probably the future. Now, what you've all been waiting for, it's what you've slugged through the drudgery of State of the Empire waiting for just this moment. It's time for Willow Watch.
What's the news?
There's no news for Willow Watch.
Yeah. And cue the exit music.
But
we can speculate.
You know, if this is your first State of the Empire, you may want to check out the other State of the Empires where we dig deep into the Willow continuity and find all the reasons and explanations for why you might be able to see a Willow film in the future. And last time we announced definitively that Disney does hold the rights to Willow and that a second Willow project could in fact rear its head someday. However, we know nothing new. Our warning level for Willow Watch is still it's still quite low. It's Rock Dove.
No, wait, you're right. We were at Rock Dove, but since there's been no new developments, does it go back down?
No, because it was
Disappearing Piglet, Reappearing Piglet.
Right.
Then Rock Dove.
Right. Once it was announced that it was with Disney,
that was Rock Dove. Yeah.
And since there's been no regression of news,
I guess just
it's still at Rock Dove.
But regression of news is just silence.
Or no, regression means never mind, it wasn't with this. Announcing for sure. We are not moving forward with like a definitive.
Okay. Well, then you bring up a good point. So it's just we're at Rock Dove. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Someday I hope we'll get to Muskrat level and maybe all the way.
We get to Ostrich, I'll be shitting a brick. You'll know it's for real when that happens.
But hey, I don't want to leave you guys hanging. I want to talk about some cool Willow stuff. And this is something it sweeps a little bit beyond Willow, but it's still cool and seemed like a good time to mention it. There's a website called Tested, and they posted an expose on something that I'd never heard of, and I'm not sure anybody else here was aware of, a live show from the early 90s in Japan called the George Lucas Super Live Adventure. Had any of you guys heard about this thing before this article was posted?
Before the article, no. I'd never heard of it in a million years now. It's like, but the article is fascinating.
Yeah, how about you, Matt?
I have not heard of it.
Oh my God, Matt. Oh my God. I'm not even going to do it justice. Basically, we're going to link to this article. This is a This is a lengthy article, but it tells a saga of the most ridiculous stage show ever made. So here's me talking about it in broad strokes. And if this interests you, check out this article. It is a fascinating piece.
With photos and everything.
Yeah, yeah. It's as much information as possibly could be collected on this thing that was never documented. I mean, like, no one even fucking filmed this show. Between 1991 and 1993, one of the largest touring stage shows of all time was developed. And it featured Willow. So the George Lucas Super Live Adventure mashed up all the most memorable sequences from Star Wars, Indiana Jones, American Graffiti, Tucker, The Man and His Dream, which was a Lucas-produced Francis Ford Coppola film, and Willow into one insane stage performance. Japanese TV companies ponied up $25 million to finance the production, which included an elevated stage 60 feet across, a pair of giant screens for showing 70mm projections of Lucas's films, hand-fired lasers, and a full-scale inflatable Millennium Falcon that landed on the stage. Hmm. And that's one of several large-scale inflatables that they built for this, including a full-scale Jabba. In April 1993, George Lucas Super Live Adventure opened to a crowd of more than 10,000 in the Yokohama Arena in Japan. The show toured Japan for 5 months. As I said, it was never officially recorded, and this article is the best source relating to any information on it. It was based around a young Japanese-American girl named Hiromi, who would sit in the audience and be randomly plucked from her seat at the start of each show. She traveled through Lucas's film worlds with the aid of Shalendria's wand, seeking a hero to fight the powers of evil.
I have Shalendria's wand, Mahmota.
In the end, of course, Hiromi discovers that she was the hero all along. I hear the plot's, you know, really, really fucking bad, but it was explosions and lasers and stuff that was kind of illegal almost, and a bunch of technology that had never been properly demoed before. And man, read this article.
Yeah, really.
Here's the Willow part of it. The fucking show opened with Willow. Willow enters from the back of the auditorium and hands a small bundle to Hiromi in the audience. And now I'm going to read some quotes as remembered by Scott Ferris, the man who conceptualized the show and brought it to life. Willow runs up on stage and he's confronted by the evil General Kale from the Willow movie.
Yeah. Holy fuck.
Willow's frozen with fear and the general comes up on horseback, this giant Frisian, beautiful Frisian horse, and climbs down, takes out his broadsword, and chops Willow in two. But he ends up with only a cloak. It was a great effect. Kale gets back on his horse and rides off, and Willow's discovered out in the house. And he grabs a girl and pulls her out and brings her up on stage, and she's got the baby, and that's the baby that the evil queen and Willow wants. This is the setup of the whole show. He brings her up on stage, and suddenly they're visited by this spirit, this fairy that appeared in Willow, Shalendria, dude.
You just said her name, man.
Well, actually, I said his
name. Oh, you said it. Okay, cool.
And she speaks to them and says, "We're looking for a hero to protect us. There's a dark force coming, and you've been chosen to find that hero. Take this wand," and magically this wand appears, "and use it on your journey. It will help you." And all the sets for the films represented the stage show were absolutely massive, like many stories tall. And the Willow set features a looming castle with a working drawbridge.
What the fuck?
This thing was crazy. There's no way to see it ever at all.
Someone in Japan has got like a VHS camcorder version.
They say there are some grainy videos out there somewhere, but you'd think that they would have filmed it. They talked about bringing it to America. It didn't happen.
Right.
I mean, man, this thing. Read this article. Here's another Willow tidbit. In 1989... Capcom made an RPG game for the NES. We've talked about this. I might actually do a playthrough sometime in the near future.
I remember that stream. Game. It was really bad.
But they also, this is the part I didn't know, they also made an arcade side-scrolling platformer.
I may have seen that.
I've never experienced it. I looked into it. Certainly you can find the ROMs for it probably, but on YouTube you can watch all the levels played. There are some levels where you play as Willow. There's some levels you play as Mad Mardigan. There's some levels where you get to choose. And it looks pretty cool. I found an ad that would be like in a trade magazine for people who ran arcade places or places that had arcades that had some interesting information about it. It said it featured Capcom's computer-aided difficulty adjustment, which automatically adjusts to each player's skill level.
Huh.
And I don't know if that's the kind where, oh, this guy's doing really good, let's make it harder, feed those quarters, or if it's like, oh, this guy's not doing good, let's see if he can beat the game. I don't know which way it is.
If it's for money, then it's probably got to feed more quarters.
But 1989, interesting that they had that already. And also, there's a level where Matt Morgan fights a boss that's a dragon, a tiny dragon. And in this trade ad, it said, Mad Mardigan fights Mantanda. So Mantanda is the name of this expanded universe Willow dragon. That's probably something that you're not going to hear anywhere else. It's a stupid fact, but there it is.
Is that like two?
There's a dragon
movie critics, two video game critics names mashed together.
That's probably just a Japanese word because I mean the score for this game doesn't sound anything like the score for Willow.
Hmm.
So I'd like to do something now. I was watching these games videos. And there's some translation issues here. There's some funny words. So it opens with this, you know, the cycle of when an arcade game is idle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it says some stuff that's kind of funnily worded, and then a thing happens. So here's how it goes. You can watch this online. We'll link to where you can watch it, but I'm going to read it for you. It opens with a shot of the nursemaid running with the baby and Bav Mortar's over the top, and she appears. She wants to destroy the holy baby, Elora Dannon, the evil queen Bav Morda. He was selected as a protector of Elora Dannon against Queen Bav Morda, a peace-loving man, Willow Ufgood. He joins Willow's fight against General Kale, a fatal rival, a brave warrior, Mad Martigan. A super game from Capcom coming this summer. And the games, you're watching this on the game, so obviously it's out already.
Yeah.
A magnificent fantasy filled with love, friendship, and adventure.
Love, really? Huh?
Willow.
Did you hear that?
Willow.
Yes, let me replay that for you. The title comes up, and you hear
Willow.
Can we play it again? I think we have our new soundbite when we start Willow Watch.
I want to play it again.
Willow.
Yep, that is the new soundbite.
It sounds like Mr. Plinkett. Willow. Winners don't use drugs, guys.
Willow.
Here's the rest of the lead in. The story has already begun for all brave players. And you see an Ebersick belching fire, and then the scores. So the game starts, and you get this little title crawl. One young man starts on his journey to save a baby saint from Bavmorda's wicked hands. His name is Willow. And then the High Alduin says, Willow, be careful. Bavmorda's fingers penetrate outside of the villa.
Oh, boy.
And then you start at stage one, which is called Crossroads, but in fact starts at the Nelwyn village.
It was an emotional crossroads for everyone.
But the game actually looks like a lot of fun, and I look forward to playing it someday, but holy crap. I can't even deal with that shit.
I know, I'm like, it's
the holy baby. The baby saint.
The baby saint.
Wow.
So we'll link to where you can check out those levels on this episode's page.
Willow. If we ever do get to play that, it's like, I'm going to sit down. It's like, Cap said it was a great game. Let's play. You are great.
Willow.
Willow.
Winners don't do pizza rolls.
So thus ends Willow Watch.
Willow.
Willow. It's never not going to be funny.
Nope.
I imagine some guy at Capcom USA like localizing it, because it's either one generated by some really bizarre late 80s simple text program, or it was somebody actually saying it.
Come on, man, give it all. You gotta be mysterious, but you gotta be, you know, draw the kids in. You gotta get the kids over to the machine. One like word, one take, let's go.
It sounds like a sad dad.
Willow, I guess. It's like, so if it's a sad dad, it's like, oh, I looked at my bank account. It's empty. All the kids took it out and they put it into quarters. Like, what did they waste all those quarters on? Willow. That's what it sounds like.
Head cannon accepted.
Hex, did you, in your travels on the internet, did you end up finding any Willow erotic fan fiction?
No.
You weren't even looking, were you?
Nope. I was.
Shame on you, sir.
I was busy.
Cap, are you going to look it up right now? See if there's any. If the name Willow is in the title of the erotic fan fiction,
honestly, all you need to look.
The search is difficult on account of the amount of Willow fan fiction pertaining to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, bummer. Willow and me. Gosh. The Biggs of the Willow. No, I'm sorry. The Wedge. He's the Wedge of the Willow.
He's the Wedge because he didn't die.
Yeah.
I found something, but I'm not sure that it's Slashfic or not, but it's about Mad Martigan. It's called Back in Chains.
Skim through it. Is there anything that suggests erotica?
So far, no.
Aw, man.
Hold on, maybe.
I like it takes, you know, this person's dedicated when it's that long of you clicking from page to page before you're like, maybe there's a hint.
No.
Oh, man.
It's so close. I thought it's like Matt Mardigan's in chains and Laura Dannon's queen, and he's in chains for some reason. I thought it was going to turn into this weird kind of like
incestuous.
Incestuous. He only maybe raised her as a kid, so I don't know. But
for all we know, he got drunk. Well,
when Willow rode off on the little horse at the end, he was at the castle waving
as her guardian.
In all likelihood, Matt Mardigan raised Laura Dannon, but in the context of the stories, I don't know. But it hadn't gone there yet. So we did have a listener who was looking for some, hadn't found any yet, and said if he didn't find any, he would make some. So hopefully that will happen. But if you can find some Star Wars crossover fan fiction with Willow or some Willow erotic fan fiction, I don't know. But if you can find anything, anything, we'll read it in an amusing way, either on State of the Empire or perhaps as some kind of like an extra.
And wherever.
Because we know you don't come for State of the Empire for erotic fan fiction.
When wherever the word Willow is stated, it will be replaced with the soundbite.
Can we get that on like a shock jock radio show? Please get a button in here of just Willow. Is that it? And the button right next to it, Matt Mardigan.
Oh, so good.
We have the worst soundboard ever.
The button after that, light the 13th candle.
Oh God!
Want to breathe? Not a woman!
Not a woman!
Willow trap fiction. And that guy just has the shittiest luck.
Oh, poor Lug. Poor Lug.
His luck, like the guy from Return of the Jedi with the Rancor, just
tempting, but no. In this fan fiction, Frangine uses the dust of broken heart on Lug.
Warning: I did not own any of these characters, and we all know that in the movie, Matt Morgan says tempting, but no. But in this version. Knowing this is the only way he could get his friends out of here to safety. Make it happen.
Is there any more Star Wars stuff you want to mention this episode? You got to mention.
I just did my research on Ahsoka on Wikipedia. Before the show was canceled, she was on trial, a military tribunal, and they were thinking about kicking her out of the Jedi Order. So she may not be a Jedi. Just throwing it out there.
Sounds like a weird ass loophole.
What was she on trial for?
I never got there. It must have been within the last like two or three episodes that aired.
Is that some shitty way to be like, well, Vader won't kill her because she's not a Jedi anymore. We can keep selling toys and kids don't have to cry about it. But that's what it sounds like to me. Just a lame excuse to tell the kids.
Oh, it's okay, no Jedi, no death.
Well, we'll see. Now that George isn't calling the shots anymore,
like Vader's walking. Are you a Jedi? No, I quit.
Oh, okay.
I used to be, but then they kicked me out.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay, that's good. Me too. I understand, bro. Want to join me?
We could go beat them up.
You know, grab a cup of blue milk or something. It's like,
yeah.
Man, you want to just like, I don't know, hang out in a Star Destroyer and take pot shots at mouse droids or something, you know?
It's really fun, because they just, like, wheel around all the time.
Like, try and stop me.
Drunk Vader is what this sounds like. It's like breathing apparatus. He just takes one of the oxygen tubes off and just, you know, gets, like, gin in there or whatever. He's breathing gin is what it is. Hey,
just a hair of the dog.
It's a shame that Qui-Gon Jinn isn't the one that killed him, because the hair of the dog that bit him would be Qui-Gon Jinn and he'd be drinking gin. I don't know. That's a very roundabout. Thank you, Matt, for laughing, because it was funnier in my head than when it came out of my mouth.
I like Qui-Gon jokes for some reason. Like the whole, why can't we let Qui-Gons be Qui-Gons? I love that one.
What other Qui-Gon jokes you have?
I think that's it. But it's two for two.
Well, if any of you listeners have any Qui-Gon jokes, send us
your favorite Star Wars and Willow jokes. As well as your favorite fan fiction.
info@nerdyshow.com or post on the forums or comment on this episode's page. Do what you got to do. We want that stuff, though.
Did you hear the joke where it's Empire Strikes Back and, you know, Vader chops off Luke's hand and he's like, I'm your father. Luke goes, no, that's not true. It's impossible. And he goes, search your feelings. You know it's to be true. And he's like, no. And he goes, yes. And I also know what you're getting for Christmas. He says, what? That's how could you know that? I felt your presence.
What's where'd that come from?
That's an old one, man. That's I heard that in 1997.
I've never heard that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's fucking good. Oh, well, thank you for listening to this episode of State of the Empire. If you like what you heard, please support Nerdy Show. We are listener supported and we rely on your generous donations and we'll send you cool stuff in your email. You can also earn microsodes where you can request that we talk about certain things at every $100 mark, 100, 200. We get 15 to 30 minutes of us talking about whatever you want us to talk about.
And we like to talk, so it might go longer.
It
often does.
Sometimes things happen. Strange things. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Matt.
Taking us out. You know, there's not really many more Star Wars tracks that we can put into this until some new ones come out. So instead, well, we could hang out with our favorite robot men. Not too very long ago, we talked to the Proto Men about the forthcoming Capcom Unity Mega Man project, and part one of that project finally came out. It's Mega Man Rocks, and it's a compilation featuring all the great Mega Man-influenced rock musicians, and the Proto Men have a brand new track on it, as well as two revisions of some of their previous work. So we talked about it on this other show, which we'll link to, but now we can finally play it. Here's Built to Last, the brand new song by the Proto Men. Have you not heard it?
No. Stop talking and play it.
It's pretty amazing.
Still survive. Get out while you can. I am. Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is made possible by A Comic Shop, Nerdapalooza, and the generous support of listeners like you. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, or making a contribution in our monthly support drives. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show voxophones and pictograms. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programs, community forums, kinetoscopes, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via the iTunes Store. And for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks.
That's a good scene. That's a good recommendation.
Chance Cube right there.
Sorry. Matt can't see the joke, but it's all right.
Hey, Matt, Doug, to help him do the Watto voice, he has one of the gigantic, way too high quality Watto drink toppers from Taco Bell.
I remember those.
And they put a D20 dice into one of its hands.
Oh, that's awesome.
Chance Cube.
Red, we do Mega Man. Blue, the Ewoks.
Hex, wave your hand.
You own the smoke, Hex! But that makes no difference!